Welcome to Workforce Insight, the podcast for business leaders looking for fresh insights and solutions to today's most pressing workforce challenges. I'm your host, Bhushan Sethi, Joint Global People and Organization Leader at PwC. In each episode, you'll receive new ideas from experienced practitioners who are helping employers drive workforce transformation. Today's business leaders expect a post-pandemic recovery that will stretch the boundaries of what's possible for their organizations in an increasingly digital world. And as a result, they're focused on expanding product and service offerings, as well as pursuing new mergers and acquisitions to help accelerate their access to talent and technology. In this episode, we'll discuss how focusing on culture and people can create value during the M&A integration. I'm delighted to be joined by two leaders in our people and deals practice, my colleagues Nadira Ibrahim and David Burrell. Welcome, Nadira and David.
Thank you, Bhushan. Happy to be here.
Same here, Bhushan.
Wonderful. Nadira, the first question to you, the fun question, is if you had to evacuate your home, what three things would you take with you and why?
Well, I guess it would depend on the matter of urgency in the evacuation process. But I would start with, of course, making sure family is well and accounted for, husband, kids, my two cats. I would say the second thing would be some important documents, right? Passport, and then your usual wallet, keys. And I think the third thing is a little bit more sentimental, would be family photos. You know, some of those memories are priceless. I know that's easily solvable, but this is also reminding me that I should go ahead and get going on digitizing all of those.
And David, what three things would you take with you?
All right. I swear Nadira and I do not coordinate our responses on this one, but my response is veer from sentimental, practical, and recreational, right? Three things. Sentimental is grab my partner. Can't do without him. So why leave him behind? Number one. Number two is passport. That's the practical part, right? And number three is grab a bottle of Macallan Scotch. That's the recreational. You will need it in times of evacuation.
You both have your priorities absolutely right. Great. I hope you don't have to execute that plan anytime soon. So the M&A market is incredibly hot right now, whether it's technology firms, whether it's SPAC, whether it's the low borrowing costs. What is it like working on M&A transactions during a pandemic, David?
You know, Bhushan, it's so interesting because obviously the pandemic has changed our lives in so many different ways. It has also given a new and possibly enduring definition to work life, as we all know. In this new order of working virtually from homes, what we are finding is that the business leaders have started to realize what dealmakers have known for a long time, which is culture is absolutely critical part of recognizing the value in M&A. It includes a focus on shared values and behaviors, environmental, social, and governance, ESG, and also D&I. And this is not only shaped by the pandemic, but we also the events that we have seen occurring throughout the pandemic, societal events. And these values and behaviors shape our employee experience, interaction, and morale within the organization and characterize essentially how a company gets things done. Now, most deal makers, including corporates and private equities, insist on figuring out what we call the culture equation. This means investing in resources to effectively uncover the differences before a deal happens, as well as enlisting behaviors in engaging, problem solving, and driving their teams to take action. One other point I would mention is that employees and leaders have very different perspectives on culture. In a global survey, culture survey we did in 2018, 63% of C-suite and board members said that culture is consistent with how people act versus only 41% of employees, right? So there is a disconnect there. And so having a clear baseline of what the current state cultures of both organizations are, where the compatibilities and the differences are, is essential to starting the employee transition journey and also ultimately preserving the deal value. Nadira, do you want to weigh in on particularly the D&I component?
Absolutely, David. And I agree with you. The focus on culture is definitely increasing. And I think more importantly, I'm finding that the question is being raised no longer from maybe the HR leader, but it's from the CEO. It's from the M&A integration lead, because right. It is a key component of the value creation plan. Now, from a D&I perspective, what I'm seeing is there's a recognition of paying attention to that aspect of the organization and addressing it and starting to look at it earlier in the deal process. We're seeing a review of D&I policies and plans and the underlying data in the diligence stage to understand, you know, what are the risks and opportunities in that stage as the deal makers are formulating their bid and, you know, refining their negotiation approach to get to a signed agreement. It's no longer something that gets looked at sometime post-close when they get around to it.
So what I'm hearing is the leadership, the purpose, the culture, some of the diversity and inclusion aspects are moving up front in the diligence process and being a reason why firms either don't go ahead or look to accelerate. Nadira, when you're formulating human capital plans for the M&A around the broad human capital agenda, what are you seeing as being important right now for clients to get right?
I'm seeing that they want to first understand, are there priorities that are aligned or misaligned with the deal thesis and why they're looking to do the deal? And then what are some of the things that need to change to make sure that they achieve deal value? So are there the right leaders in place? Is the governance framework established, or is there going to be some significant investments in some of these key human capital areas to make sure that they get the groundwork in place before they begin to launch from there in terms of any strategic direction?
Yeah, you know, interesting. While there has been so much shift in the future of work and the different models of working and automation and so on, talent, Bhushan, continues to be a key focus. There are skill and talent gaps that continue to drive the rationale for many deals across industries. And again, both private equities and corporates are really focused on addressing the preservation of the key talent that they are acquiring. So it almost runs contrary somewhat to this presumption that as we continue to automate, et cetera, that we will be continuing to downsize as a result of automation and other trends. But not necessarily. The equation has just shifted to looking at who are the key talent? What are the new skills needed? How do we upskill those? And so this is yet another reason why HR, which has traditionally in deals been in a much of a tactical block and tackle type of functional integration mode, it has risen up the agenda to the CEO agenda, the board agenda in deals.
So Nadira, as you think about the M&A transactions, are there any stark differences from your experience of working with the sell side or the buy side? Anything you do different if you're a divesting company?
I would say that I'm increasingly seeing more and more when you're on the sell side, wanting to be a prepared seller. I think in years past, it was more, let's do the bare minimum to make sure that we get the deal done and then we leave everything else to the buyer. And I think when you take that approach, you may leave some significant deal value on the table. So getting ahead of how buyers and different kinds of buyers may view the asset that you're divesting, how they may price any risks and making sure that there's a different positioning that you may want to put on the transaction are all essential elements of, again, being that prepared seller.
And David, from a human capital lens, as you're divesting, are we seeing firms making investments ahead of a divestiture around some of the human capital agenda?
Yeah, one of the big agenda items from a sell side is the retention of talent, right, which I touched on earlier. But here, what they are interested in is retention of two types of talent. The talent who are, let's say it's a carve-out of business. So the talent that is necessary for the retained business, and you do not want them to walk before the deal close. Equally important, and this is where it is a shared agenda between the buyer and the seller, is the talent that are critical to the deal itself. So you do not want this population to be walking before the deal closed, because then the buyer is essentially losing their value proposition. I was recently working on a deal where we are advising the buyer, but we did a rough culture analysis and we saw that there were potentially huge differences in employee sentiment between the two. And when we presented it to the seller, they were much more concerned about making sure that the buyer is aware of those cultural differences so that they can tackle it very proactively.
I know all three of us have helped companies go public, and we see a wave of that right now. I think the transparency that you need around being public and making sure that people understand, whether it's SEC disclosures or other aspects of human capital, are absolutely critical right now. And David, if you've got anything to add there.
Yeah, actually, I'm working on one right now in terms of IPO and as going through a SPAC, actually. So yeah, there are all the disclosures. And typically from an HR perspective, the treatment of the equities existing as well as the future state equity planning is key, because that is where the disclosures particularly come in, which is not something that non-public companies are used to. And compliance. You want to make sure that you are in a compliant state, even in basic things like I-9s, which are taken for granted. But in a public company, you just can't get this wrong. So it adds to a greater degree of transparency and urgency, I would say, because it is all working towards the IPO deadline. Now, add to that, if you are already tackling an integration and getting ready for IPO, then there are almost two parallel tracks of work that need to be addressed, and some of them will interlock at times, but that's where the urgency also picks up.
In the human capital domain, Nadira, we've worked with companies together that have acquired companies that have different HR processes. They maybe brought a technology firm that manages performance and compensation in different ways, or recruits in different ways. What's your experience today now, and what's your advice for HR leaders as they go through those acquisitions and they analyze their HR programs? Where should they harmonize and where should they keep them different?
We know from our experience, most of our clients, both our financial sponsors as well as corporate deal makers, have always had a value creation plan. What we're seeing now is an increase in the role of HR as part of that value creation plan. Question is, how will the HR function enable the execution of that plan to realize the deal value so that there's a full alignment between the workforce strategy and being able to deliver on that business strategy? Now, a couple examples on this is, are there some skills and talent gaps to help deliver on those business objectives? And what is the timing of that as part of the business plan? In the near term, is a talent acquisition team have a plan to make sure that they address the skills gaps and like how to hire talent in the market? And on the longer term basis, the talent management approach and the learning and development plan, is that all set up to make sure that there's a retraining and upskilling journey that the existing workforce will be going through? Another area, clearly in this past year, you know, many companies are grappling with their approach on hybrid and remote work. Now, companies are in various stages of this transition and redefining how and where work gets done. Organizations on one end of the spectrum have gone fully remote and reduced their real estate footprint. And on the other end, there are those that are somewhat in a holding pattern, right, until that they're just waiting for the right time to basically get back mostly in office. Now, if you put these two companies together in a deal context, that becomes a forcing function to reconsider the approach. How is that going to impact the culture integration, the collaboration, and the career development and opportunities and progression for the talent that come from both sides of the organization experiencing a different model?
David, the HR playbook for an M&A has broadened. It obviously includes things like new ways of working and virtual work today. What other changes have you seen over the years of doing hundreds of transactions around the HR M&A playbook? And any advice for HR leaders today?
You define HR in a deal almost like HR for HR and HR for the business. HR for HR, what do you need to tackle within the function, from policies, procedures, systems, comp, ben, etc., to operationalize for day one? HR for the business is facilitating the entire operating model and the org design. And that may not necessarily sit within HR per se. The other thing is that HR for the business is change management. And that's where we have seen, and we would advise HR leaders to really put a focus on. We recently did a survey in which we asked organizations about their focus on culture and change management. And almost 60% said that they have a change management program. But the majority of those did not include most of the drivers of change management. You know, by change management is communications. Change management is leadership. Change management, it is getting the training correct. You can't just tackle change management in one component, especially when you're talking about broad-based change across the entire organization. So, Bhushan, that's the most significant shift that I have seen over the last decade or so in the HR for the business type of activities. You do a lot of work in the workforce of the future. How would you say that the landscape in deals has evolved as a result of the evolution in the workforce of the future thinking?
So as firms think about their future, I mean, that could actually drive the reason for the deal in terms of we need to access technical capabilities, cyber capabilities. We want to drive new business models through technology platforms. So we're seeing some of that with our clients in terms of the skills agenda. And then very tactically, it manifests itself in updating workforce policies. So how do we work remote? How do we work with a significant growing amount of contingent workers? So wherever we look, there's changes from a future of work agenda. Nadira, I'd like to hit on the messy topic of HR technology and data. We know that this is the cornerstone for any good HR decision-making, sell side or buy side, big decisions about what platforms should be adopted. Any insight and experience there that the listeners will benefit from?
Absolutely, Bhushan. We're definitely seeing a high demand in terms of our clients in doing deals of wanting more data and analytics as part of the deal evaluation as well as deal execution. I think reliance on data, making good use of that data and taking action and decisions from that is certainly a hallmark of being disciplined and executing your deal. One way we see this is using data to redefine their strategy from an HR perspective, meaning like using deals as a catalyst event to rethink rewards. In light of the changing workforce or the demographics of combining two organizations, perhaps a traditional approach to compensation benefits may not work or may not be suitable for where the business wants to go going forward. We've conducted total rewards preference analytics in the deals context, and the findings are often surprising. When we conduct the survey, you know, it's really helpful to think of it from a very broad view of the elements of the employee value proposition and ask employees to rank them, ask to make hypothetical trade-off. Do you want X percent more 401k match or Y more days of time off? Do you want lower medical premiums or more bonus opportunities and things along those lines? And based on those preferences and trade-offs and the degree of the trade-off choices that are made, our clients are able to revise their rewards package to deliver on the things that employees truly value and redirect their spend and reduce costs. Now, when you can demonstrate you are listening to employees while contributing to synergies, that is a really powerful combination to drive deal value.
David, for our listeners that have not worked on human capital M&A transactions, there's probably not a realization that a large amount of this work had to be done face-to-face pre-pandemic. Yet, we've all worked together on these virtual clean rooms. Do you want to share some of your experiences there? And what lessons we can learn on how we do deals work differently?
This might seem a little contradictory. We think that actually deals work has become much more efficient in the virtual workplace. For us, who are consultants, this hasn't been a big leap. We are used to remote and virtual working all the time. But for our clients, it is a definite shift. But like most of corporate America or corporate world, the companies have made the transition to virtual working quite effortlessly. If anything, we find that there is much more interaction via video meetings than we would normally expect in a live deal setting, where we may be in a war room, as we call it, at the client side. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're also getting simultaneous exposure to the other side of the deal or to the lawyers. You know, they're all kind of segregated meetings and calls. So this has actually streamlined in many ways the pace and the efficiency of the deal-making environment.
I would add to that that I found it interesting in a few deals that I've worked through with clients where, in a way, the video calls sort of facilitate establishing some rapport because, in essence, it's a window to their world, right? Their lives, their living room, their pets, their kids. So I'm finding when two organizations come together to work through all the blocking and tackling and the integration planning, that there's a way that people can relate differently than perhaps in the past.
That's fascinating. So similar to what we're seeing around the world, we've all surprised ourselves. Personally, going from a in-person physical clean room to a virtual clean room, I didn't think it would be possible for M&A practitioners, clients, but it does, as you say, seem to be somewhat seamless. So as we look to wrap up, maybe start with you, Nadira. As clients listen to this and think through either a pending piece of due diligence, an M&A integration that they're working on, or a divestiture, what are some of the actions that they should be thinking about right now from your perspective? Maybe start with you, Nadira.
The key thing that comes to mind here, Bhushan, is the speed of deal making and the expectations on realizing deal value has accelerated. So these days, I would highly recommend HR leaders to find opportunities to supercharge those key priorities using the deal as a catalyst event to maximize those strategic initiatives that may have been out there, but maybe have not had some love and attention. I'm seeing people find ways to do that in a deals context.
Adding on to what Nadira just said, in the due diligence phase, particularly, if you think about expanding or appending, as you say, to what we are doing the due diligence on, I'd go back to culture. Culture is something it needs to start at the diligence phase. You may not have necessarily access to all the employees in order to do a robust baseline. But what we do in those situations is we are doing increasingly sentiment analysis based on publicly available data, which gives quite a good perspective of where the two companies stand. Number two is also focus on the leadership assessment. Often the leadership assessment is not very deep, but even during diligence, you do get a fair amount of exposure to the other side that you may not need a third-party executive assessment firm to do that, but you can still form a robust view of what is the talent bench of the leadership in both organizations. So I would focus on both of those.
So what I heard from both of you is it elevates the role of HR at the strategic level. Leadership in a deal context is so important. Nadir and David, what would your advice be to teams who are being asked to work on this from a, how do they prepare for this? How should they execute M&A human capital work?
My advice would be to embrace it and thrive in a fast moving, changing environment. There is a ton of learning opportunities that will enable you to grow different skill sets and build on your experiences. It's exciting and people will find it interesting to work on M&A situations.
The two other things I would mention is that we are seeing so much focus on using digital and data technologies. And we will continue to see that the use of digital technologies as accelerators and tools to make our work much more efficient is going to introduce a level of savviness to our workforce that probably did not exist before. The other thing that I often say is that with deals, what is particularly exciting is that in the matter of 3, 6, 9 months, you are actually seeing tangible results of what the entire deal was about. Because it's such fast-paced, you actually see that deal closed, the two companies are now one, talent is now productive, operating, policies are in place. And that's something that you don't often get, I should say, in very long-term transformational projects, right, where you're coming in for a particular defined phase. So that's really exciting to see the results of your solution.
So as our listeners think through this, it's a fast-paced environment. You will learn a great deal and you'll see some of the tangible outcomes. Thank you, Nadira and David. What I personally took away from this, which is very exciting, is purpose is at the heart of why our clients want to make deals. It drives their decisions around deals. It also enables people as they're working on these deals to actually build new skills, work in different areas, and see the outcomes from their work. It's been a great discussion. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to this episode of Workforce Inside. Please do visit our website for more insights on how to tackle your organization's workforce challenges and to subscribe to this podcast series.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.